Hey team, welcome back to Game Time. I'm your host and coaching teammate, Shauna Griffiths. And as always, y'all are in for a conversation with an impactful leader. Today, I am honored and thrilled to have Christopher Williams on the show. We actually met on LinkedIn. He is a global leader, has done a ton of transformational work at some of the most iconic brands globally. So Nike, Gap, VF, on Wall Street, just remarkable impact that he's had on business, but also on people. And so, of course, that makes me want to have him on the show. And today we're talking a lot about courageous leadership with a nod to an upcoming book authored by Christopher. The book is titled Courage, Seven Choices for Living a Life Without Regret. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. It's exciting. I know we've talked about doing this podcast for a while. I'm happy we can get it done now. This is quite fun.
Thank you so much. It's been in the works for a while, folks. I first knew I wanted you on the show, OCW, when you and I met for coffee in Denver. And right then I knew I wanted to draft you as one of my leadership athletes because of your mindset. And I think that's when you first started writing your book. Am I right?
Yeah, I was just about started then. This book took longer than I expected it to, but I was just getting into it at that time. I was probably in the first few chapters at the time. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And we mentioned this earlier, around the same time, we both lost our fathers, and you and I were just talking about the aging process and not taking things for granted, and pointing back to your book title, Not Living with Regret, you know? So I think that's been a beacon for me throughout my life. And it seemed to come together so much when you and I talked. So tell us, what inspired you to actually write a book? Because it is not an easy process. I started one and then I was like, I'm done, tapped out.
No, it's not easy. And in my case, I've always enjoyed writing from a very young age. And I, you know, my wife would say, I think some friends who are around me would say that I have a vivid imagination. I'm not sure that I do, but I do like to connect dots with things that I see around me. And yeah, so it's always been on the back of my mind. But really what drove this book itself was coming to a crossroads right around 2018, when I was at the time at Adidas. In the US we say Adidas, but so excuse me if I say Adidas, and decided to leave and was contemplating what I was going to do with the rest of my life. I was quite, you know, youngish for an executive. I was not quite 50, a few years shy of that. And so I knew that I wanted to do a whole lot more than just hang out, and I couldn't afford to hang out anyway. So the idea was, you know, well, what's going to be the sort of operating, if you may, what's going to be the sort of operating philosophy for the second, or at least for this next stage in life? And I had to go back to myself, into my own experiences, and ask myself what had been the most important factors in my life. And, you know, to cut a long story short, you know, really honed in on courage. And once I reflected on it and started to take notes and, you know, try to build it out for myself, what did this mean? I started to test it. As I was speaking to people, because I've always been very comfortable talking to people about their lives and evolution and growth and transformation. I mentor a lot of young people, and it started to come up a lot in what I was seeing some of their roadblocks to be. And I started to really exercise, you know, just a lot of more freedom to really delve into the conversation around courage with them, and realize that, wow, there was something there. And so the book that was came out of my notes and my reflections, and I've just been fortunate to be able to compile it all into one volume. It sounds quite strange, but that's what it is.
Yeah, it's so important. Just the part that you said about it came out of your active listening, out of conversations, reflective of this moment in time, extended moment in time that we've been in. You said 2018 around that time and then forward. And, you know, it's been such a turbulent time, tumultuous, all those words that you can imagine. Courage is so important in those times, because so many times what we see is in the face of fear shutting down, in the face of fear getting in our own way with excuses, we start to make up stories that about what negative things could happen. So I think it's, you know, it's a great time for your book to be coming out and for you to be out speaking with people about courage, because it's needed now more than ever, but courage in the right way. So what are your thoughts about this moment in time and why courage is so important for leaders?
There's so much to tackle here. Well, one of the, I think, quite obvious points to make is that we've had, you know, as a global community, we've had peace for a really long time. But at the same time, we've had the rise of global commerce and companies and countries have grown and done quite well. And we've gotten really comfortable consuming and really basking in the fruit of some of the peace, time, stability that we've all enjoyed. I think COVID put that, you know, I mean, 9/11 was an event which I think rattled all of us. And we were kind of recovering from that, and then COVID happened. And I think what we've also now entered is this space, this state of continuous technology change as well. And so things are not as stable as they once were. And we've seen this have a range of different impacts all around society. And one of the ones that I like to focus on is how institutions have evolved. Institutions have become somewhat confused in some ways as they're trying to grapple with all of this change. Mm-hmm. They maybe become unreliable, some would say. Leadership has become quite confused as well, in some cases corrupted. Mm-hmm. As they try to make choices, sometimes understandable choices, sometimes difficult choices that we scratch our heads when we see and contemplate. We've seen with social media and technology this distortion of truth. I think that's been an interesting challenge, especially for young people. And then attendance to all of this has been this sort of breakdown in civil discourse. And so these are all very important pillars of what we used to call normal life. And I think it's now more and more critical for us to develop our own very strong innate perspective to what's going on in the world. And have a sense of who we follow and how we lead, and to what degree we're part of a move towards a new kind of normalcy that is respectful of everyone, or to what degree we are part of the problem and part of the challenge. But this takes a lot of us finding our own selves and being able to stand up for what we understand to be our own set of values, and to be comfortable, you know, proselytizing those values. And it's going to take us being uncomfortable. And that's a big shift for many, many, many of us. It's, well, how do you shift away from being in flow with institutions and the way of being that was somewhat aligned with who you were by and large, to now having to interrogate things and take a stance and sometimes follow through on that stance with your own action. So I think on many levels, whether it's in terms of society, in terms of our careers, in terms of our personal relationships, in terms of how we all become a bigger part of our solution that I think makes life comfortable for everyone, courage becomes critically important.
Yeah,
and I think
absolutely.
The timing, I didn't create the timing. I was just writing a book about my own life and my own evolution of it. And then all these things sort of started to converge, and it sort of made sense for me to get the book out quickly. And I'm kind of happy the book took a long time to write, because it allowed me to really tailor it to where we are right now.
Yeah, definitely. And the part that's really landing for me that you were just talking about is having courage to be uncomfortable, because what's happening so much, I mean, we talked about fear a minute ago, is in the face of fear, a lot of people resort to kind of playing defense, right? And so that's what we're talking through, is to get out of that mode is uncomfortable. It requires us to your point, look inside first and get really clear on our own values and our own mindset and understand ourselves. Then we can start to lead others. And all of those things take a lot of courage, because we face things that we don't necessarily like. They've worked for us in the past. Really forces us, challenges us to push ourselves forward and the others around us. And to your point, that can be really scary. It's just the place of unknown. So having that courage, that bravery to step forward and stand on your own is critical. And it's not easy to do alone. So that's why I'm also just so glad that your book has come out at this time.
Absolutely. It's not something we can do alone. I mean, I liken it to a pilgrimage. And it's funny, in the middle of writing the book, or maybe even towards the end, which was last year, I went on the Camino de Santiago pilgrimage in Spain. And after that long walk, it took us about 3 weeks. It's the one I mentioned in the TED Talk. I started to see this metaphor of you walking your own way, which is what the pilgrimage is. You walk it for different reasons. And at the same time, as you're finding yourself and asking yourself and answering all these critical questions that are important to you, you're meeting all the pilgrims who are also walking their own way. So you have some common experience in the moment. You have some common experience in the goal, which is to get to the destination at the cathedral in Santiago. But at the same time, you're walking a number of different paths and you're walking faster, slower, you know, in different ways. But you do have a shared community with whom you can rely and exchange notes on how to walk and how you're doing today, how's your feet, and what are you, you know, there's all these tactical elements that are really, really important to exchange about, because they help you solve challenges that you might not understand, because there are people who walk the Camino several times. So there's knowledgeable people out there. But at the same time, you're walking your own way. And I think that's important. So that's the thing with courage. It's still, it's a shared experience which we all have. No one is disconnected from the notion of courage. But at the same time, we have to figure it out in our way. And that's the element that makes it quite interesting. I talk about courage. My experiences and issues are different from yours, but I think you generally understand what I'm struggling with, as I would you, even though we're living very different lives. So yes, it does take some amount of independence, but it also takes some amount of community as well. And what I hope to spark with this book is hopefully some kind of a movement where we are talking more intentionally with others about our struggle with courage and how we are building momentum as we learn from each other.
Yeah. As you're saying it, I'm beaming, smiling from the inside out, because, you know, you started these leadership athlete huddles, which you've been to. They're just 30-minute meetings.
They're fun.
Meetings.
I enjoy them. I've attended one and I thought it was amazing. Yeah.
Thank you so much. But I do it and I'm staying true to the core of it, which is exactly what you just described, is we often as leaders feel really alone. But the reality is, to your point, we have shared experiences, even though they're different. And so being able to be there for each other and in a vulnerable state, even when you have courage, you still are vulnerable, right? You might even be more vulnerable than ever because you're having the courage to come forward and ask for things and say things. And we say, what are you looking for? So what do you want? And what can you offer? Basically the foundation of those leadership athlete huddles, but it's for exactly what you just said, a courageous community that's going to support each other. And I love the story that you told about the Camino, like how are your feet and everything, in a way, again, going back to leadership athlete language, you got to check on your teammates, right? Like whose feet are killing them and, you know, whose eyes can't stand any more of the computer screen. So I share that just to say I'm in 100% agreement with you. And, you know, I'm in the movement with you. And I think so much today coming off of this show, hopefully so many people who hear this are too, because again, adopting this mindset, this way of operating, will help people to move from a place of fear, a place of defense, and into more of a place of action, of intentional action in courage and, you know, on offense, which doesn't have to mean aggressive in a negative way. So, you know, with that, I'd love for you to talk about, what does it actually look like in practice when you're operating as a courageous leader? Because again, the opposite of that is when we don't take risks or we make safe choices. And that's not always what is needed in business or in life.
Absolutely. Yeah, I go into detail around what I consider 7 critical choices. Because one of the things I found out is that courage is one word and we use it quite frequently. And many times I think the true impact of what the words mean gets lost, because it's just one word and we think it means kind of be bold, be brave, and we're not quite sure. And I think that's what in some ways makes it so complicated. And one of the things I wanted to say in the book was, it's not about being Spartacus or Superman or Batman or always just being this sort of superhero. I think courage has the ability to make us superheroes, but we don't have to have this larger than life personality to be called courageous. I actually found most people didn't like even being referred to as courageous because they just felt so distant from the idea of being sort of this larger than life figure. So I had to try to demystify it, and that's why I tried to break it down into, there are some traits, and I came to those through my own exploration of self and speaking to lots of people. And I think it's not one thing. You know, number one, I say in my TED talk, which is, you have to care about something, because it places so much, like you said, so much of who you are at risk, and sometimes, and it introduces this notion of fear. And so you need to overcome this immediate obstacle, which is this thing that you're fearful of. And you want to know why you're doing it, and to some degree, what you believe in, or what you feel firmly or strongly or passionately about, becomes really important to sort of frame up the idea of courage. And it's not always one thing. With every decision, there has to be something that you are in it for. And so the power of the motivation, the power of the aspiration, or in a bigger sense, the power of your own sense of purpose, helps frame up what your courage can look like. And if you go back to all the figures we've all experienced in history, you know, they were all clear about what they were fighting for, you know, or what they stood for. And whether it was Martin Luther King, or, you know, Nelson Mandela, or Malala Yousafzai, you know, and I talk about them in the book, and I've talked about others as well. There's something that they were passionate about and wanted to stand for. So this question about purpose really becomes really important for you to frame up for yourself. And it's a very scary concept in itself. Is it some grandiose mission? And sometimes that's a little intimidating. I just brought it down to live your everyday life and find out what motivates you, or what makes you uncomfortable. Are you uncomfortable with injustice? Are you uncomfortable with poverty? Are you uncomfortable with inequity of different kinds in society? Mm-hmm. You know, just follow your own heart and let that marinate a little bit more than just a passing observation. And in there, you will find something that you really want to stand for. And because it's your life and it's a 360 view to your own perspective, it is going to show up in different ways. So there's no one right thing, which is the one thing that should drive your purpose. It can be anything. But if you're really committed to it, it manifests itself in different ways in your life, and will show up and guide your decision-making, because you are attendant to something that is very meaningful to you. But it's a journey you have to go on, and it's one of self-discovery. It won't come in one tabletop exercise. I think you have to spend some time really questioning and answering and questioning and testing, and then you'll find it.
Yeah. And it's interesting, as you were talking through that, the thought that came to me is, a lot of times people go to external sources to figure out what their purpose is. They want to develop a mission statement, a purpose, that kind of thing. And the reality, like you said, it is important in your journey of figuring out what your purpose is to talk to other people. But the most important person is to talk to is yourself, and ask yourself these questions. What do I actually care about? And to your point, that comes over time of being curious about different things and learning and having those conversations. And then I love what you just said about what makes you feel, you said, uncomfortable. Like what doesn't sit well with you? And that is where we can really reveal purpose, I think. That's a really great way to say it.
Yeah. And I, one of the things I mentioned in the book, which is a controversial thing to some degree, is we have this obsession, maybe not everyone, but generally, you know, we love being happy, and we all talk about happiness. And I love the idea of happiness and joy. They're two different things, but I love the idea of always being positive and optimistic. That's really, really important. But one other thing is that how we define happiness sometimes, I think, does us a disservice. You know, sometimes I find we don't want to have uncomfortable conversations and we avoid them. And sometimes those are the uncomfortable moments that could yield learning and exploration and discovery. But if you're always looking for happy conversations or want to be in happy places, you're really not going to have a good, strong view of the world and your own value system, because sometimes you need uncomfortable situations to really frame up your values. So sometimes uncomfortable places, uncomfortable situations, uncomfortable conversations, talk to the person you don't like, and go to the places that scare you, you know, engage with somebody about a topic that you don't know much about, you know, venture into these uncomfortable places that quote unquote don't leave you feeling happy in that sense, but there's a lot that you can discover there, because those are the things that will challenge you. The things that are just harmonious with who you are just going to confirm what you really think and feel and believe, and then you go to bed happy. But I advocate something else. I advocate, you know, running sometimes towards discomfort. And that was a really important thing I learned early that I've tried to practice. I'm not always good at it, but I intentionally go to places where I feel uncomfortable, talk to people that make me a little bit, you know, feel a bit uncomfortable, because, man, you learn so much. And that's what really makes a difference.
Right. And that does require us to be curious. And actually, you talked about framing values, and that makes me think that also requires us to reframe how we're thinking of those, air quotes, uncomfortable conversations. If we simply talk about it as it's a conversation, it's just a conversation. And so we can try to tailor the way we're thinking or feeling going into it. It's just a conversation to explore, to be curious, to find out new things. And then after, you can figure out how you feel about it per se. Someone one time, they were going into a, air quotes, uncomfortable conversation with one of their employees. And I just really encourage that reframing of, it doesn't have to be uncomfortable. Right. It can just be a conversation where it's just an exchange of information, right? At the end of the day, that's all it is just data. We don't have to put emotion to it right out of the gate or until we choose to.
Yes. And I think that also goes back to something which, again, as we try to unwrap how you get to being more courageous, is also being very aware what your narratives are. Because those opportunities that you've just described, oftentimes ones that we have a point of view about, you know, whether it's because of our own past experiences or our own biases, which are all valid, because these are all data points that are important for us as human beings to process as we make decisions. But we also have to just be very aware, you know, about where some of these viewpoints come from and to what degree they've shaped our own operating narrative. And so we don't engage with some scenarios because we think we know what they mean. We think we know what they imply. Oh, I know that guy. He's that way. Okay, I won't talk to him or her. So we build this wall, which is essentially our narratives that have become this restraint or this judgment with which we approach many things. And so we never allow ourselves to really delve into, like you said, just have the conversation, find out new information. You don't have to change your mind, but at least be open to learning something that could make you change your mind and maybe build your new friendship or introduce you to someone new or make you aware of an opportunity that you probably did not know about. So, but you got to really work with your own narratives as well, because sometimes those narratives are part of the wall and the obstacles that we've created around ourselves.
Yeah. And the more we practice these things, the more we show up each day with a sense of courage. Every conversation we get through that was, air quotes, uncomfortable, when we reframe it, and the more we do that, you're working on a muscle, right? You're training yourself so that it actually makes it feel less risky each time you try a new thing, right? I was actually just thinking about it in a parallel sense over the weekend, because in riding bikes, yesterday, John and I rode, I guess it was Saturday, we rode 100 miles on gravel, and we were laughing about how we felt afterward compared to how we felt previously. But I remember the first time I rode 100 miles. I thought it was just so hard and more mentally than anything. But these years later, I'm not afraid the day before to ride the 100 miles because I've proven myself that I've tried so many different distances and things over time. And so I use that physical metaphor because it's very similar in this using courage to help be a guidepost for ourselves as we're operating in leadership. It gets easier and easier to show up every day and making courageous decisions. And when it's authentic as you practice it, then it actually feels less comfortable to operate from a place of fear. It feels less comfortable to make the safe and easy decision. And if you wear it in a different way from the inside out, where that's what you stand for, and that's just simply how you operate.
You're totally correct. And you mentioned something which I've tried to frame up as well, which is this, the notion of the athlete mindset, because that's ultimately what it is. I think, you know, we think of athletes in a professional sense, but we're all athletes to some degree because we are all aspiring and we all try to achieve new things. And hopefully after we've achieved them and we've demystified them, we aim higher. And so we go, we do more and more. And it's the same thing. I remember my first 100 mile ride as well in Portland. I did, I think it was a Portland Century, the first time I did those. And I showed up cold. I hadn't even been riding my bike much. And I remember it was maybe the hardest day in Portland that year. I mean, we're close to 100. I'm in the middle of nowhere. And I am thinking, geez, can I call a cab? Like, how am I going to do this? And I pushed through and I get to the end. But it's interesting. I don't think it was Portland 72. Which one goes to the coast?
There's so many. I don't know.
It's from the city all the way to the coast. Or is it reach the beach? Or is that? Okay. It might be reach the beach. Anyway, I got to the end. And the feeling, though, of really getting there, especially knowing that I pushed through many moments of self-doubt that I could have walked away, but I pushed through. It really reframed this notion of pain and discomfort and being goal focused. And so much so that I think that year, that first year, I did about 7 or 8 centuries. Because after that first one, I just went and signed up for a bunch. Because it just demystified the whole thing.
Right.
And I think that practice and that experience is what courage is all about. You have to put yourself in that situation. And you're going to hit those patches when you want to walk away. In the last chapter of the book, I talk about the resilience. And you have to weather through those patches. And it's all about being first or winning a medal. It has nothing to do with that. It's all about you and your relationship with your limits and how you take on those limits by overcoming limitations. And as you overcome limitations, you get closer to what was once a limit. And then you reframe the limits because now you set new limits because you've overcome limitations to it. So this play between limitations and limits keeps etching, you know, moving the bar higher. And that's how the discovery of courage happens too. And it never ends because there's no finish line to it. And you continue as long as you're willing to just be in the game of testing yourself and pushing and trying and failing and getting up and keep on going. You keep on moving and it becomes a fun experience. And that's the whole thing. I talk about courage and joy in one chapter. I'm like, what is going on here? Well, yeah, it becomes joyful. Because you are in this mode of just discovering about yourself and discovering about the world and debunking and learning. It's this thing that just keeps on happening. And it's so much better than, you know, opting for the status quo, being comfortable with it, and then just staying in it. And that's the change that I'm trying to drive with the book. Again, I'm speaking like I know all the stuff. No, I'm on the journey still. I'm still on the journey. I'm still working through it. But I think I have a much more optimistic, and I use the word again, joyful approach to it than I used to.
Yeah. And just as you said that, the word popped into my head, possibility. When you're coming from a place of courage, when you're moving things forward, it is a sense of you're creating possibility. You're on the look for observing possibility, which again is counter to moving from a place of fear and seeing things as limited instead of limitless. But just one last thing on what we were just talking about with the rides and stuff is the phrase that comes to me that I share with a lot of people I work with is proving yourself to yourself every day. And that's not about being competitive in a fight way. It's more about, again, working with yourself to get to the next thing. And I love how you said when you finish the century, folks, let me tell you what, when you finish a century, usually it doesn't feel very good. It can feel really brutal. But it's so funny that we're going to plan the next 100-mile ride we're going to do right then. Or you're going to sign up. You said you did like 7 that year. But this, the why of it becomes because you proved yourself to yourself. Now you see that you can do it. And so you want to do it again. Each time you know you're going to be in the hurt locker throughout the experience. Very few people ride 100 miles, or you're not really pushing yourself, I guess, and have no moments of wanting to quit, self-doubt, pain, physical and mental pain, you know? And so it's such a great parallel, I think, to be able to say, okay, you know what? I'm going to go for it. And so thank you so much. I'm so glad that we touched on that. And there's something that I also want to bring forward that stands out to me that I love about that you are the person doing this, is that you come from such a global background and that you have worked in corporate and you're working with executives and you're mentoring next generations. And it's through a global lens. I think I read that you've been in 14 cities and 4 different continents. And
yes.
The reason I love it is because so often when we have somebody who's tackling a topic like this, they may have a very narrow view of being a white woman from North America, from the United States, or a white man, or again, from a very narrow view. And so from living and working around, what you're talking about is actually, it stands out as a global solution. It's informed by what people are feeling and experiencing globally. So I'd love for you to talk about that a little bit. What do you think has been, I guess, the best thing about that global take?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I'm actually still trying to unpack it because there are just so many dimensions to it. And, you know, one thing I have to say up front is, you know, in this process, especially just acknowledging that everyone is walking their own journey, there's no judgment, you know, so there can't be, because it doesn't make any sense. It's a weird, strange thing to feel when everyone is figuring out, you know, how they approach this idea of courage and how they do so in their own way. And so my story is not necessarily the only story, but it's mine. And this is how I like to think about it. The first is, I grew up in Sierra Leone. I was born in Sierra Leone, West Africa, and came to the US when I was about 18, 19 to attend college. So one thing that had done more than anything else, well, I was more mature when I came to the US than someone who came maybe when they were a little younger and I came to college. So I was dealing with a lot of interesting things. And number one, getting to the US was itself a whole process that took me departing from what my normal was and making different choices to get a scholarship to attend Morehouse College. But once I arrived, you know, you then begin to understand different other dynamics. And that's where I realized how lucky I had been to have the background and the grounding that I had. Because I was now in a new country and nothing's new, nothing's stable, nothing is mine. So you have to then learn and sort of figure out things. And one of the things I found out was that, number one, there's no right way to live. And so the way I thought life existed was different from the way Americans live their lives. And the way Americans live their lives might work for Americans, but may not work for someone from Africa. And it's the same thing with the courage. There's no right way to experience it. But what I also had to do as an outsider trying to become more comfortable, I had to deal with all of these issues. I had to deal with the issues of fear. I had to deal with the issues of lack of confidence. I had to deal with the issue of being the only person in the place who had a strong accent. But again, going back to purpose, knowing that I wanted to be educated and I had a drive to do well and to succeed, was in many cases, call it my mission at the time. So I wasn't going to let other things stand in the way. So this is what kind of happens in real life. What you really believe in, what you really stand for, whatever it is, really helps you now navigate some of these obstacles that courage and fear throw in your way. So that was one. But the other thing I found out is that there's also perception and reality. And sometimes perception and reality shift by where you stand in the conversation. So as someone from the African continent, which is perceived one way in the world, trying to navigate life in the US, I was always trying to debunk other people's perceptions of me, going back to narratives. They had their narrative of who I was. And that narrative immediately put me in a box in their mindset, in their mindscape. He's African, he has an accent, okay, he's in this box. And that was them creating comfort for themselves. But in many ways, it's also challenging for me or for people like me coming from the outside, because you know yourself and you don't want to be put in that box. But that box is a very narrow box, and maybe it begins to constrain your sense of courage, because you're not expected to do certain things because you're supposed to fit in someone else's box. So you have to always be fighting that tendency to be fit, to be put in a place where you don't want to be constrained, because you have a better, bigger sense of yourself. And so I've come to understand that now, having lived in the US since the early 90s, how I manage when I travel the world, where now I have the point of view and I'm presented as an American executive, and I'm in other parts of the world where people, you know, look up to me because of who I am, or look up to the company that I work for, or the fact that I'm a US citizen. I always have to remember that I am not putting them in these boxes. I'm not constraining their courage. I'm not creating a place or context where they cannot be comfortable, they cannot be courageous. And I think that's made me a much more effective leader in a global sense, because I've sat on both sides of the table and I've been there and I'm here. And I'm always trying to make sure that I'm very aware that I'm not doing or saying things that are constraining other people's sense of courage, or amplifying their sense of fear, or magnifying their sense of exclusion. Because all of this come into play in this conversation about courage. It's not always is the case, but it's a big part of it. People are responsive to the environment and how they feel about the environment. And to the degree that we've created environments that constrain them, you know, we've created one more hurdle for them to jump over, you know, in being themselves, in being courageous, in being outspoken, in being, you know, competent. And I think we give short shrift to how important inclusion is in the bigger conversation of really maximizing the people around us, because it allows them to be more courageous. So that's one element of having a global background has done in my understanding of the concept, but also in my effectiveness as a leader. And I'm going to keep unpacking this, because there's lots of other things I need to figure out about how this can work and how you can really help people on either side of the conversation do better.
Yeah, it's such a great response almost to how do you lead courageously? What does that actually even mean? Everything that you just described, you know, including you didn't ever say the word empathy, but that was a word that came to me as you were talking, is when you're leading the way that you just described, you have a sense of empathy, right? It's not a one size fits all. This is how you operate. This is what courage it looks like. It is having empathy for others and what they're going through, and also being able to see courage show up in one person in a different way than others, and pouring into that. That's what we do as courageous leaders. It actually takes courage a lot of times in a seat of leadership, whereas a lot of times it's profit, profit, profit is what you're judged by. But the reality is, when you can lead with courage and you do it in a profitable way, but also in a purpose-driven way with empathy, that I think is where we're getting to what does it mean in a bigger sense when we talk about leading courageously.
I agree. And it's a conversation now that comes up quite a bit. You know, we as executives more attendant to the shareholders or something else. I've evolved to the place where I am very clear that broad stakeholder interests are very important. Companies can thrive in perpetuity unless they have a healthy relationship with the different stakeholders in the environments in which they operate. Employees, consumers. You know, if your consumers aren't doing well, they're not going to buy a product. They're going to be distracted with all the things going on in their lives. So we have if the environment is at war, or people are fighting for water, or fighting, you know, to just stay alive or have a decent quality of life, it impacts us. It ultimately shrinks down our addressable market. So it's in our best interest to make sure that we have this healthy relationship so the system and the ecosystem is working and thriving. So we have to find that balance. And that also means that we have to manage the short term versus the long term. We have to manage shareholder interests versus stakeholder interests. We also have to manage this idea of power and wealth and who has it and who we perceive not to have power and wealth, and understand that it's a fine balance. And if we sit on the wrong side of all of those, of that duality, you know, we're short-term focused, we're more focused on people who have power and wealth, we're more focused on shareholders, we'll ignore stakeholders, we'll ignore the future, we'll ignore dissatisfaction in the broader community that we live and operate in, then I think we're creating a set of dynamics that ultimately could impact the companies that we operate and the brands that we are trying to build. And so that's really important. And ultimately, when we do those things and we find the right balance, consumers will reward us. I've been fortunate to work with some companies that are very connected to this bigger idea of well-being in communities that they operate. And consumers understand that and they reward that because it builds trust. It builds a stronger relationship. It builds community. So for me, it's very clear. And you know, I know it's very topical in the news today and, you know, everyone's weighing the balance, but I'm crystal clear that companies have to operate so that they can thrive over the long term. And it is not possible to thrive over the long term if you're not balancing your shareholder interests with stakeholder interests as well.
Yeah. In a world that complicates that general concept, it is amazing to me the way that you just described it in such a simple way. So listeners, I'm telling you, rewind. Listen to that back. It is, and when we make it that simple, there's no other way that it actually makes sense to say that you're going to be profitable if you're not caring for those other elements, if you don't care about the well-being, or you're not doing things to pour into the well-being of the people who you want to actually even buy your product. So that is, it really is beautiful. And I just really appreciate the way you simplified it, nailed it.
No, thanks. I've been inspired by leaders I've worked with and companies I've worked with. There are a few companies out there that are doing this really well. Others are trying, and maybe others not as much, but it's clear. I just wish that I'll keep working and talking about this and hopefully continue to influence people about this.
Well, thank you. We need you to keep doing the work. And I think that as you've talked throughout this entire episode, it really is making it stand out to me that reading this, your book, again, the title is Courage, 7 Choices for Living a Life Without Regret. Reading it is a must, not a nice to do, especially during these crazy times. So as we close out here, I'm curious, when readers close that book and they read that last page, what do you hope to see next for them?
A couple of things. First is for them to assess where they are on this journey and really take a hard look at their own lives and to see to what degree there's opportunity to improve. Again, we're all in different places and some people are already far down this journey, others maybe not as progressed. And I've been in different parts of the journey at different points in my life. I think the change that I'm in now, the place that I'm in now, is that I'm a little bit more consistent and intentional and really finding what are these roadblocks to being more courageous. And we've talked about some of them. Sometimes just being over modest, you know, being courageous sometimes is about speaking up, speaking your mind, stating your position and not giving in to being too modest or too restrained in how you advocate for yourself and how you exercise your own agency. So there's some work to be done on ourselves. So that's the first thing. And the second is, like I said earlier, have more conversations with others, because I think in these conversations, there's a possibility that we can trigger the motivations that they are looking for, or we can have answers to some of the questions that they are struggling with. Or we can create the community that they need so that they don't feel like they're walking alone. Because to some degree, some of the journeys you're walking alone, but you can walk together even if you're working your own way. So number one, be aware, be intentional, start a reflective process for ourselves. And number two, you know, start a movement, engage with others, maybe have a courage accountability group that you check in with every now and then. Hey, last week you said you were going to work on this, and we all agree that this is something that you could try to do. Did you do it? What happened? And how did that work out for you? And if I feel like I'm going to check in with a group every couple of weeks and explain something that I promised I would work on, then I might take a little bit more effort to do it. So yes, I'd like us to start a movement, informal, and be on this journey together.
Well, you definitely have me as a part of the movement. You have Leadership Athlete Mindset and, you know, the community that we're growing as a part of this. And, you know, truly, we talked about the endurance sport of cycling. It really is so much like the sport of leadership that we're all, that you and I are choosing to play. And we invite other people to play in this, which does require that courageous look at self first if we want to be able to lead others and lead business in an impactful, meaningful way. So I couldn't think of a better way to close this one out. OCW, you're the best. I'm so grateful for being a part of your journey.
Thank you
for sharing everything you did with us today. With that, OCW, thank you so much. And everybody have an amazing, courageous day.
Thank you, Shauna. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.